All right. Welcome, 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 everyone. Ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between, this is Tony's Political Ramblings. And so today I'm going to tackle a very big topic, something that is really fundamentally, as far as the U.S. government goes, the central conflict between the states and the federal government. And this is something that I like to think of on something along the lines of a spectrum. Obviously, on the one end, you have states having complete control of their own destiny, and on the others, you have the federal government completely controlling everything. And everything else in the United States' history falls somewhere in between those two poles. Because obviously, on one end, if the states ran and completely controlled their own destiny, we would not be the United States, but merely 50 separate countries. Well, and all the other territories as well would be their own countries. And if it was on the other end of the spectrum, where the entire federal government controlled everything about the United States, there would cease to be the states. So obviously everything falls in between those two poles. We've never really veered too close to either of them throughout our history. However, this particular podcast is going to look at the sort of argument of states' rights and sort of break it down and to put forth at the end of it to say, well, the states are not supreme. The states are not the highest power in the land. That always goes to the federal government. And because many states, particularly in the same parts of the country, I'm looking at the South, the Midwest, and the Southwest, have continually and consistently abused their powers and privileges, the federal government has had to step in. And that's why we have to have federal oversight over the states. And it's not because the federal government is a tyrannical body that's trying to overreach into the lives of everyday people, but it is rather done to prevent the states from reaching in and controlling the lives of their citizens. Now, this really begins. The United States has a fundamental shift in the way that its government approaches things after the Civil War. The Civil War that was fought because the states in the South believed it was their right to own other human beings, while the states in the North disagreed with that. And so the Reconstruction Amendments, the 13th Amendment, which made slavery legal, the 14th Amendment, which provided equal protection under the law, regardless of race, and then the 15th Amendment, which gave black men the right to vote and prevented discrimination based on race in terms of voting. Those three amendments really recontextualized the United States Constitution. Whereas before, it was a document that favored the rights of the individual and the rights of the states. However, after the states were in gross violation of those rights, the federal government had to step in and made sure that people weren't being discriminated against based on things like race and eventually gender. And eventually sexual orientation. And the 14th Amendment is the amendment that is often used in a lot of these cases, in the Supreme Court cases that has made gay marriage legal, that has made abortion legal, et cetera, et cetera. These Reconstruction Amendments were the big cause, because states were creating laws that prevented individuals from having equal protection under the federal law, under the Constitution. The Supreme Court ruled in a way that protected the rights of those individuals from infringements from the state governments. Fundamentally, that's what happened. And so now that I've established the general philosophy of the Supreme Court post-Reconstruction and the federal government post-Reconstruction and post-the Civil War, it's helpful to get into why the states have proven time and time again that they need this federal oversight. And the first and most obvious example of this comes in the Jim Crow laws in the American South following the Civil War. So for those of you who aren't familiar, that was a lot of what happened after the Civil War and into Reconstruction. It came down to Southern states enacting laws that went around the amendments that I've just talked about, that worked around, that segregated and separated Black people and white people in those states. So now those are the laws where you have separate bathrooms, separate schools, separate water fountains, separate sections on the buses eventually. Those all were born out of racist lawmakers from state governments, from state legislatures in the South that made these laws and that separated Black people and white people from each other. And one of the most obvious examples of this too was voting. Because of many of the rules, you know, laws like poll taxes, literacy tests, they really disadvantaged Black and brown Americans and made it very hard and almost impossible for them to be able to vote. And the systems in these Southern states made it where even if somebody had the means or the ability to pass these ridiculous measures, sometimes it was almost impossible for them because the cultures around these governments were so hostile and violent towards Black and brown, particularly Black people, that it made it impossible to vote without a threat of violence coming. And then the Black people would not get put on the voting registration, or voting registry. And so this Jim Crow law, these Jim Crow laws that were big in the South really went on for decades. And eventually you have the Supreme Court decisions that said that separate but equal was okay. As long as the two facilities were equal, that was the Supreme Court's decision for a while. And then eventually you had the Supreme Court flipping that and saying, no, you cannot make these things separate. You have to integrate. And that was obviously in the 1950s, you know, with the Brown versus Board of Education and other cases along that nature. However, I wanted to look at a particular anti-lynching bill that came up in the 1940s. This was not able to clear Congress, though, because of the strong Southern majority in the Senate. And it's not the Southern majority, but the Southern control of the Senate. So basically, the argument was from these Southern senators who held positions of power in the Senate that this was no longer an issue and that it should just go back to the states to resolve it, and the federal government need no place in terms of interfering. However, lynching was still very much an issue in these states, and it was not being resolved at the state level, regardless of what these Southern congressional representatives and senators were saying. And failure to act and sign this bill into law at the federal level continued this trend of lynching, and this horrible, disgusting practice was still not explicitly illegal in the United States. And so it kept going in the South. And it didn't happen as much in the North, obviously, as the attitudes were quite different from North to South. But still, a bill of this nature would have made lynching illegal. But it wasn't passed at the federal level, and it wasn't passed at the state level. The failure to intervene by the U.S. government, it allowed the deaths of innocent Black men and women for years to come. And so now I've looked at the past, and now I want to go to the present and take up two issues that the Supreme Court has looked at in the last 10 years and is looking at currently. And so the first one is going to be Shelby County versus Holder, which was a Supreme Court case in 2013 that looked at Section 4 of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, which was a piece of legislation that was signed into law in 1965 that expanded voting protection and rights across the United States, and basically gave the right to vote to Black Americans. And once again, this is an example of federal intervention to prevent violation of rights at the state level. And so in 2013, though, the Supreme Court ruled that Section 4 of that bill was unconstitutional. And basically, their argument was that the fourth section, which is a section that make sure that districts and local sections of states that have a history of discriminating against and making and suppressing the vote, making sure that those districts with a history of discrimination and suppression, that any changes to their rules have to be approved by the federal government. Any changes to the voting rules have to be approved by the federal government. And the Supreme Court said that this was unconstitutional simply because it had been so long. And while this was necessary in the 1960s and 70s, it wasn't really necessary anymore. So at that point, since Section 4 was made illegal, Section 5 was therefore made illegal, which basically said that and Section 5 was the part that explicitly said, not illegal, unconstitutional. When Section 5 basically said that those states and districts had to get federal approval, and Section 4 said that those states and districts had to be examined and looked at to see if they had a history of voter suppression. And so since that was stripped out of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, since then, many states who have had a history of voter suppression, lo and behold, went back to creating new laws for voter suppression. And this has particularly peaked since November of 2020, in which former President Trump lost the presidential election to current President Joe Biden. And this has really picked up since then, and it's become a massive issue. Where in just 2021 alone, 19 different state legislatures passed 34 laws to suppress the vote and make it harder for for individuals to vote. And this is, again, it just shows that more proof of, as soon as you gave that right back to the states to control their own voting laws, they made it harder for people to vote. And these are almost all come from Republican-dominated state legislatures. Georgia, Texas, Florida, Pennsylvania, Ohio. These are all states that are full with state representatives who are Republicans. And one more that I wanted to look at was vaccine mandates. Now, this is something that's being looked at the Supreme Court at the time of recording. And basically, the argument is that, you know, it's taking a look at President Biden's vaccine mandate at the federal level. And basically, the argument is whether it should stay at the federal level or be passed down to the states. And in I'm not going to go into great detail on this one, but my argument is here again, where states that refuse to get their people vaccinated, to get their residents vaccinated, are prolonging this pandemic and killing innocent Americans. People who refuse to get vaccinated are far more likely to die of COVID-19 than those who are vaccinated. And the fact that states, which up to this point, again, many of the familiar suspects, states from the South, Midwest, and Southwest, have refused to crack down on COVID-19 by mandating that people get vaccines, are the ones who are contributing to not only the death of their own state citizens, but death of the country's citizens. Because I don't know if any of you are familiar with traveling across state lines, but it isn't very hard. And it isn't very hard for somebody to go from, I don't know, Georgia up to North Carolina, or maybe all the way up to New York. And therefore, COVID spreads and mutates faster from there. So this is not something that can simply be passed down to the states in terms of vaccine mandates. It's something that is a federal concern, and it affects everybody. So when you look at all of this taken together, when we really take this conclusion here, and you come back to the fundamental issue that is at the core of the United States' government, how much power should we give to the states, and how much power should we give to the federal government? The states have continued to show, in particular states, as I've said, from the South, Southwest, and Midwest, have continued to show that they are not to be trusted fully. This is not to say that the states should not have the rights to conduct their own business. However, the states have a track record of violating the rights that are outlined in the Constitution. And they themselves become the very tyrannical oppressors that they fear the federal government will become. The states, throughout the United States' history, have voted to enslave other human beings, to create separate segregated facilities based on race, a completely arbitrary distinction between human beings. They have suppressed the right to vote time and again, even going so far as doing it after an election that the Republican Party has lost. And now the corresponding parties in these corresponding state legislatures are trying to rig elections so that Republicans don't lose in the future. And with vaccines, with a disease that has infected over 61 million Americans and has killed 838,000 of them since it has arrived to the United States in early 2020 or late 2019. The states cannot be trusted completely, nor can the federal government, to be fair. But the states have shown time and again their weaknesses and their tendency to exploit vulnerable, often marginalized Americans. And it is on the federal government to regulate and oversee these states to make sure that these rights are held intact. Thank you.